Coming at you live from the Bureau of Grossology, where we put the ew in eugenics, it's Cartoon Night in Canada.
Hey, what you watching?
Got a problem with cartoon?
Welcome to yet another episode of Cartoon Night in Canada, a nostalgic podcast where we dig through the animated past to find what cartoons made here in Canada are worth remembering. I'm your co-host, Chris Lucy Antonio.
And I'm your co-host, Sylvie Kennels.
And we are back in that fertile territory of gross-out humor.
I mean, we had to come back to it eventually.
Be more excited, Sylvie. This is what all the kids in the late 2000s were clamoring for.
Ew.
Exactly.
Stinky.
No. You say that, but you have to add a laugh track to it because it's fucking hilarious.
I thought you were going to add the laugh track. I'm sorry, I didn't bring my own.
Well, now I will because I am the master of post-production here. So yes, yeah. I will put a laugh track in there because we are hacks.
Yeah.
I think we mentioned this before when we covered a tangentially related series, Spliced, but I never liked gross-out humor. I was the sophisticated kid who was just above it all.
Yeah, you were the one into sex jokes. Like a mature
yes.
youth.
Yes, a different kind of gross-out humor, thank you very much. The one that connected me with the adult audience.
Mm-hmm.
Not all this mucus and vomit and shit play that all of these kids are laughing at.
That's for babies.
Exactly. No, I enjoyed the fine wine of gross-out humor, which was dick and ball jokes.
It was, you know, a good boner joke.
Exactly. That's class.
Yeah.
That's class right there.
That's like a fine wine of humor.
Exactly. Yes. I'm a sophisticate when it comes to my gross-out humor. Anyway, we kind of covered it when we talked to Splice the last time about... This was a massive phase throughout the 2000s, really trying to get this going and injecting it into a lot of kid shows at the time, not realizing that gross-out humor is a really powerful spice, and when you introduce it to a show, that's the only thing you can focus on. That becomes the whole vibe of the show.
Yeah, you can't really have, like, a gross episode. Like, if you have a gross element, you have a gross show now, that's just it.
Yeah, it is the, like, a no-go zone of childhood humor tropes. Like, once you cross that barrier, there's no going back. You are the gross show now.
I feel like the line you can cross is, like, you can try to quarantine it into a single character.
Ah, yes, the gross kid.
Yeah, you can have a singular gross entity. The pig pen, if you will.
Yes, the pig pen paradox, mm-hmm. where you, like, all forms of gross-out humor are just shuffled into one character on the side. And it's just a running joke, then. You're clean. Yeah. Technically, your show is clean of gross-out humor.
Ironically enough, yes.
Exactly. But, yeah... We're dealing with an interesting case here where the entire show is based around gross-out humor, but for a good cause.
It's for education.
Yes.
I mean, we could argue that growing up creepy tried to do that too.
I was thinking that too, yeah. Using the creepy crawlies of the insect world to dole out the hard facts of... What is the study of bugs? Etymology?
Entomology?
Entomology, thank you.
It's either entomology or etymology, because one is bugs, and the other one is, like, the study of words.
Language?
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know, pick one. They sound enough alike. I'm no entomologist or itemologist, whatever, fuck it. Yeah, that was the only other case where we came across where it was trying to use the inherent grossness to kids of insects in order to educate them on said gross insects. But here, we're just kind of dealing with this umbrella term of gross things and building a show around it.
Yeah. Why not?
And then liberally borrowing from several other series that have a very similar premise to this.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that.
Yeah, this is a bit of a hybrid show that wore its inspirations on its sleeve, and God bless it for it. Yeah, shall we get into it?
Let's.
On this week's show, we are hiding educational messages and flowing rivers of bile and mucus with Grossology, created by Sylvia Bronzai and based on her non-fiction book series of the same name. The show was in turn developed by the journeyman writing team of Simon... Fuck, we ran into this problem when we did Splice. Simon Rachpa? Ratiopa.
Rachiopa?
Rachiopa. Delete as appropriate. And Richard Elliott, probably best known, as I said, for another disgusting series, Spliced, which is a previous episode of this podcast you can listen to right now. Not right now. Finish this episode, then go back.
Please don't listen to two episodes at the same time. I feel like that would be a very bad time for everyone involved.
Oh my god, like two of my voice just yammering at you? Like, what are you, living inside my head?
Wow, there's only two?
Inside on a good day.
Wow.
On a good day.
That's impressive.
If I get enough alcohol into me. Yeah, it's only two.
Well, good for you.
Any other day, it's a lot.
Proud of you.
Thank you. Someone is. The show was produced by the inescapable Nelvana, the one polar bear global warming cannot kill.
I mean, it's certainly trying. Capitalism, it's in a, right?
It's in a bit of a downturn as of late. Not, doesn't have that... Nelvana prestige of the 90s and 2000s, right, folks?
Yeah.
And, of course, well-known cartoon producer Flypaper Press, a mysterious company I could not find any information on, despite, to my best knowledge, it being a comic book publisher at one point that absolutely did not handle the Grossology books. So
weird.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how they dip their toes into Grossology for this Nelvana series, but here they are.
Maybe there were talks to, like, produce a companion piece?
Maybe. By the way, if you're wondering about these Grossology books that Sylvia Bronzai produced, they are just series of, like, comedic facts and bad illustrations about... bodily functions, gross animals, disgusting natural processes. It's just a way of connecting with your kids and getting them to learn something by, like, I don't know, throwing facts about dung beetles at them.
So just like peak middle schooler behavior.
You would buy this book at a Scholastic book fair. 100%. This did numbers at the Scholastic book fair.
I bet it did. God, I miss Scholastic Book Fair.
I know, and, like, I'm sure someone has maybe made the point, it's like, well, you know, you can just order books from Amazon,
it's
like,
not
fuck
the
you.
Same! If I'm not getting, like, a little bit of a saved up allowance, if I'm not, like, scrounging together my quarters and loonies and toonies and going into the gym to browse... It's not the same.
I mean, I don't have any kids, so I have no idea if this is still a thing, but I hope so. I hope
I think it's I still
hope
a
today's
thing.
Generation yeah, I hope today's generation get that thrill of browsing books to purchase and call their own.
Yes, they are still an active thing.
Thank God. I'm sure Scholastic is actually a bad company that we should not be supporting, but who cares?
Oh, probably. But just like the concept of a book fair, it doesn't have to be branded.
No, yeah. I mean, I'm blessed to live in Toronto where there are plenty of book fairs that I very much enjoy going to, so. Hey, you would too if you lived here.
Yeah, I live in Toronto.
I do, damn it.
The cost of living is so fucking high here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not exactly, like, bragging about certain things.
Yeah, no, I know. That's...
Okay?
That's why I had to bring that up. Toronto is rough.
I think they picked that up from our Scott Pilgrim episode. It's not... That's my city, dude. But also, God, is that ever my city, dude? Jesus. The series aired on YTV between September of 2006 and October of 2009, lasting 2 seasons and 52 episodes. For today's podcast, we let the wheel decide, and it landed on the unfortunately non-pun titled episode.
It's like one of the only non-pun titles.
I feel ripped off. I mean, the wheel betrayed us on here because there are some choice puns for these episodes, and we landed on Stinko.
Literally just stinky.
Yeah, they didn't try in the writer's room for this one. But the show was directed by series director Kevin McAuliffe and written by Richard Clark. Original air date, October 11th, 2008. Sylvie, you were familiar with Grossology beforehand.
Yes.
Was this an obstacle show for you?
I think sometimes it was, but... But no, like this is definitely a show that, like, if I was in the mood for it, I would be okay that it was on.
Mm-hmm.
I would, it wasn't like an, ooh, Grossology, but it was like a, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, I think I'm in the same boat, where I absolutely saw this show on every now and then. YTV, I feel like, played it to death in the couple of years that it was airing, and then... relegated it to permanent syndication for the next 10 years, and I remember it being of decent quality. I definitely wasn't going to change the channel, which is like the highest compliment you can give to a show if you're an ADHD rattled child at the time.
Yeah, like, oh, I would not stop this show from airing.
And you don't think that's a compliment, but it really is.
You have
the majority of my attention right now. And trust me, that's hard to do. My parents couldn't do that.
Yeah. This is the show that I think, like, you call yourself a mouth watcher. It was the mouths that kept me, the aesthetic of the mouths in this show that would, like, grab my attention.
The aesthetics in general, I think, are the... out-and-out asset of Grossology. Like, we can just do it right now. We can go into why it looked like that.
Sure, we'll break formula.
Because, like, I feel like it has... Like, it is the largest reason why people still remember the show today and or gravitated towards it at the time. Is because this look was unique for the stuff...
It's a good-looking show.
For the stuff airing at YTV on the time. It is a good, sleek... flat, angular, almost minimalist design look. It seems like heavily inspired by 1970s like spy fiction aesthetic, and specifically the minimalist design work of like Saul Bass and Kunzel and Degas, like who did the opening to Catch Me If You Can. Like the entire opening of this show, the intro, is heavily like Catch Me If You Can kind of minimalism.
Very much so. We were also talking a little bit earlier. It reminds me so much of this video game Counter-Spy that I've played just god so much of, which is like specifically like Cold War inspired in its art design. This just carries a lot of those same elements of just Cold War espionage spy thrillers.
Yeah, it's a really strong aesthetic for it. Despite, like, even looking towards the backgrounds and like the color palette, it is beautifully painted. And so interestingly, like the word I keep coming to is flat. This is a very flat looking show, and that's all complimentary.
Yeah, because it like it makes your colors pop, especially in a show like this where like the grossness is what you're highlighting. So like you're gonna have your dark, you know, grimy, dirty colors highlighted in the stinky parts, and then everything else gets to be bright to sort of like to make the dinginess pop in a weird way.
No, yeah, I totally get what you mean. It's also just very, despite the subject matter that it's dealing with, it's very, very clean.
Yeah.
Probably knowingly so because of the subject matter and all kinds of filth and disgusting ephemera that are going to be slathered over our protagonists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they have to have a canvas that's easy to really fuck up. Like, so
absolutely.
You've got, like, your protagonist's hair is in a single chunk because you know we're going to put so much pus and mucus on these children.
Yeah, and that has to do with the minimalist design. It's like there is no detail woven into like Abby or Ty's hair. Like this show is a strong proponent of the silhouette test.
Mm-hmm.
You get these characters just from their silhouette, their angular design, their just enough unique traits where it holds up in a silhouette format. And yeah, I think the design work on the show is very, very strong.
Yeah, I love all the character design, and just the thing that just grabbed my attention is that for all of the characters, like, their teeth just take up such a large portion of their mouths. And so, like, yep. when they are like talking, but like their like resting position for their mouths is all teeth.
Yep. And as the resident mouth watcher of the show, I would throw in that our two main characters and most of the human characters, there is no distinction between each individual tooth.
It's just
big
one white block.
One white block of a tooth.
And as a child, that was just very satisfying for some weird reason.
What do you mean?
I don't know. It was just like seeing their mouths like close, and it was just like this white blob. I was just like, yeah. Yeah, okay.
It comes a bit with that with that pleasant minimalist style that it's going for. It's like, yeah, you don't need too much details clouding these character designs. Just hard lines and no specific detail or lines within the character design. Just hard outline, and that's all you need.
Yeah, and these are all like most of the lines are not black. They are they're colored lines, which I think just helps everything just look so much more blended.
Yeah, and with this with the color palette and design choices, like, it makes it all pop so much more, because like this episode itself, it takes place during like a freak heat wave, and most of it is like hazy and like swamp colored for some reason. Despite it being mostly a mix of like dark greens and browns for the palette for this episode, it still feels really vibrant.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, I mean, swampy is appropriate
for what this episode is about. Yeah, but even so, like, I think the animation moves nicely. It's really well adapted to these character designs, and just quick shout out to art designer, series art director Doug McKay and his staff. They did a great job in vastly improving the art style of this book series that they're based off of. Did you look up any of this?
I did not, but I'm going to now.
Okay, well, not to throw them under the bus, but the illustrations for this book series were done by Jack Keeley, and you can't make a show out of this.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this looks like a... Credit to them, this looks like a book cover you would see at a Scholastic Book Fair, which is what they were going for.
Really does. Yeah. Yeah, no, that'd be harder to animate, I think.
Too much detail. Too much unnecessary detail. Strip it down and basic lines. You're good.
Yeah.
You don't need too much unnecessary detail clouding your art style.
Just
have it all slick and lean.
Stick to the basics.
Steal from other shows.
Steal from Disney.
Steal from Kim Possible. We'll get into that a bit. We'll get into that when we talk about the plot itself. But what is Grossology about?
So Grossology is, functionally, it's a spy action, a teen spy action show.
Alarm bells are ringing off.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Disney copyright but artists
it's,
are...
But it's
okay.
Gross-themed.
Ah, okay. Yeah. You saved yourself from a long copyright case.
So we have Ty and Abby. They are a brother and sister duo, much like Martin Mystery. They are a crime-fighting
Shaky
duo.
Ground.
However, this time Abby's the one who's really into the gross shit.
Okay.
So the girl likes the yucky stuff this time. We've flipped the script.
Fine, call off the lawyers.
I will defend this show to my dying breath.
No, I'm being facetious. The show is actually pretty good, but it's like, come on. Like, we all see it.
Yeah, so, they basically have a rogues gallery of gross-themed villains. Their villains are themed on, like, bugs, or there's one named Lance Boyle, which is, I think that's my favorite villain name in this show.
I'm a personal big fan of Kid Rot.
That is good.
That is good.
We've also got Roger Pink Eye or Frederick Follicle. Like,
these are Dick Tracy villain names.
Exactly. Like, so they've got a rogues gallery. Each rogue has their own, like, theme. It's all to do with something gross, as of course it is.
And that's how we educate you.
Yeah, and so both Ty and Abby and their man in the van, Lab Rat, they all know a lot of things about specific gross elements of the body of animals, what have you, and they'll just share those with one another and us, the audience, several times. And they work at the Bureau of Grossology for the director, I am really fond of the joke about the director, that the director of the Bureau of Grossology is a germaphobe.
They should have had him voiced by Howie Mandel. They should have gone whole hog with this joke.
Yeah. That would have been good.
Like I'm really curious about this Bureau of Grossology. Like, they collaborate with the police. They have a some level of authority in society, and they are just a counter-terrorist cell that only deals with gross villains and gross terrorism.
Well, I
if
think
you commit
it,
gross terrorism,
yeah,
you, they call in grossology.
Yeah, the Department of the Bureau of Grossology is on your ass. I feel like that's sort of, this is like a chicken or egg scenario. I feel like the gross terrorism came first. And then the government created the Bureau of Grossology to, like, specifically create an anti-grossness task force.
And then filled it with child soldiers.
Yes. Because at the end of the day, teenagers have a much higher ick tolerance.
Exactly. They're the only ones who could fight all manner of disgusting bodily fluid themed villains.
How many of these episodes do you think you could handle? Like,
how many of these episodes do I think I
like,
could handle?
Like, how many, like, villains do you think you could handle living in a reality where, like, you might get covered in pus?
If that was, like, a constant threat, like, day to day, it's like, there is just these, there's just a secret cell of very highly specific terrorists who only deal in, like, smearing you in shit, pus, vomit, urine, whatever. I think I would move.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
Like, last time I checked, Italy doesn't have a Bureau of Grossology. I'll just move there. They don't have disgusting themed villains. This is a Canada thing, apparently. Yeah. So I think it's safe to get into this a little bit now. This show takes, I don't want to say heavy inspiration, because I don't know what was going through the series creators at the time. They needed to convert a nonfiction book series, which is just a collection of facts about gross things, into a action-adventure spy-themed show. Not an easy task, but a lot of Kim Possible going on in this.
A lot of Kim Possible going on. Like, even, shit, in the Wikipedia article for this show, the first sentence of Abby Archer... Abby is a Kim Possible-esque girl who unravels mysteries. Like, it's right there at the very beginning where they're like, yeah, this is Kim Possible.
And, like, that... Kim Possible ended its run at that time, right? Like, yes. 2006, it was over?
Yeah. Like, there was a gap.
That was a huge phenomenon, though. Like, yeah. People are going to pick up on the similarities, especially if you give the man in the van, guy in the chair character, a pet rat.
Hey. Hermes and Rufus are completely different. Hermes has hair.
How so? Oh.
And Rufus was a naked mole rat, not a rat.
And Hermes doesn't talk, thank God.
Yeah.
Never liked that fucking mole rat character.
So, hey.
Leave it out.
Hermes is a step up.
There you go. Yeah. They're improving on the formula that they are so liberally borrowing from.
Yeah. I mean, Grossologies is basically like if Kim Possible and Martin Mystery just merged.
Yeah, you merge the two and then you slather it in shit.
Exactly.
There's your Grossology. Like, someone was watching Kim Possible, it's like, there's not enough fucking pus in this show. What were they thinking?
Where are the creepy crawlies?
Yeah, where are all the bugs? Where are all the flatulence? Where's all the halitosis and acne? Like, what are they doing? These fucking idiots.
I guess that's the other, goal for this show is to sort of... It's interesting in that, like, they are both vilifying and just explaining bodily functions as something completely natural. Like,
yeah,
they do that a lot in this episode. Yeah, like, this episode in particular, they're like, oh my god, B.O. is so stinky and evil and bad, and having armpit hair is bad and evil. But also, hey, the bacteria that produce B.O. are completely natural and are, in fact, good for you to have.
Yeah. But also, fuck this one specific guy who's got it really bad.
To be fair... He's doing it for a fetish reason, and we all know it.
We'll get into that, like, extensively when we talk about this plot here. But, yeah, I think you covered what Grossology basically is. Mm. It all lives and dies by this Rhodes Gallery, where they're all themed after different gross things. It's fine. Like, I think it's a somewhat clever way of bringing it together and building a show out of... this want to expose kids to gross factoids.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, kids are kind of gross.
No. There's no kinda.
Kids are fucking disgusting.
Thank you.
And I feel like this is just sort of playing into, like, you're playing into something they're already interested in. And then you're like, hey, do you want to know why these nasty things are like that? Here you go. Here's some fun facts.
It's like a pastor saying that, like, the original punk rock artist was Jesus Christ.
It's exactly like that.
That's how you trick him into learning. He's like, yep. No, you don't understand. You understand? Like, this is a really cool, sexy spy thriller show.
And it works
where all the
every time. It definitely does not make your child audience think that you're a loser.
No. I mean, to be fair, this show was actually pretty popular from what I can remember.
Yeah.
A good 2-season run, which is rare nowadays for a children's cartoon, my God. And a really interesting production team working their best to create something unique from this book series and give a whole generation of kids very specific fetishes.
I don't think it was giving anyone fetishes. It was just giving all of its antagonists fetishes. I mean, you could argue that that's the same as, like, fucking Batman villains are all, like...
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
like, that's come on. That's just a side effect of just having a rogues gallery of reoccurring villains is a lot of them are just going to be into some weird shit.
Well, and especially when you boil them down to, like, one specific trait or thing or obsession, it's always going to be like, well, when you really dig into that one thing that they're obsessed with or that one theme, it's like, there's a sexual component to it, right?
Yeah. Like,
the penguin has fucked a penguin before.
He was raised by them. It's normal.
That's his countryman.
Like, not to armchair psychoanalyze a villain who's not even in this episode. Lance boils into edging. Right?
Is that right?
Well, because, like, he's got this massive... His head is a massive boil, and he hasn't popped it.
What a miserable existence that must be. Unless you derive pleasure from it.
Exactly! That's what I'm saying, because he doesn't want anyone to pop it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of specific fetishes, so... Let me just read these things out.
Mm-hmm.
Misophilia is the fetish attached to deriving sexual pleasure from dirtiness, soiled, or decaying things.
Mm-hmm.
Olfactophilia is a fetish where your erotic interest derives from smells and odors emanating from the body, especially the sexual areas of the opposite sex.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And... Salirophilia, which is soiling or dirtying others, is the focus of your erotic interest.
Okay, what about specifically, like, not just dirtying others, but you want them to smell like you?
I think there's gotta be something there. I think that's an offshoot of olfactophilia.
Okay.
And much like grossology, that was your educational portion of today's episode of Cartoon Night in Canada.
No.
You just learned three new fetishes that exist. And I'm bringing these up because the villain of this episode, Sloppy Joe, clearly suffers from all three of these.
I don't think he's suffering. I think he's having a grand old time.
Suffer was the wrong word, yes. He is afflicted by these three fetishes and... living his best life in his smelly terrorism that he's getting up to.
Yeah, he worked hard for that stink.
Like, and honestly, just wants to share it with the world.
Yeah, like, I have thoughts about the ending of this episode. It's a tragedy.
It's a tragedy. There's got to be some violation of the Geneva Convention in how they take away his smell, right?
Well, it's not his smell. It's his protective crust.
His thick layer of grime that he walks around the world in.
Mm-hmm.
So the villain of this episode is Smelly Joe, professional
Sloppy
pervert.
Joe.
Sloppy Joe. Same thing. Professional pervert who is taking the opportunity of a particularly hot global warming day. This is the global warming episode, by the way.
Yeah, this is the hottest summer of your life so far.
They're not saying it, but this is absolutely the global warming episode. And using a rash of body odor that has come down on this unnamed city that Ty and Abby live in to spread his funk to the population.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile,
that's it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in our B plot, their man in the van, Lab Rat, is getting really, like, increasingly terrified of uncleanliness.
He's heavily coded to be agoraphobic to begin with, like most man-in-the-van type characters.
Yeah, like, that's the whole bit.
But in this case, it develops into a rapidly onsetting, detrimental case of germophobia.
Like, crippling.
Like, his B-plot is is the real tragedy. I don't know why you're so sympathetic to Sloppy Joe.
No, but... I didn't say I wasn't sympathetic. And also, Labrat, like, solves his problem at the end. He's healing.
He overcompensates in the wrong direction, though, because he becomes a full-on filth pig, much like Sloppy Joe.
Yeah, but it's brief.
And he also derives sexual pleasure from it.
Oh, 100%. However, Labrat, I'm pretty sure, is a teenager, so we're not gonna do that to him. But Sloppy Joe's an adult, so that's fair game.
Yeah, yeah, he's allowed. We're allowed to label him a pervert.
Exactly.
So what happens in this episode?
So in this episode, we've got Sloppy Joe first. Actually, it's a kind of intricate plan that he's got.
He's like the Joker, for God's sake.
This is like so. He has to pull off so many heists to make this work.
He is Smelly Joker.
This is the Smelly Joker. So step one is steal the delivery truck, bringing in, I guess, the only delivery of deodorant this entire city is getting.
Have these people not heard of, like, alternative deodorant options?
Nope.
Like, you can just use rubbing alcohol.
Nope, they have to go to Shoppers and get a stick, and get a secret.
Secret.
So that's the only deodorant brand I could think of off the top of my head. Old Spice, I'm pretty sure these...
There you go.
Yeah, these particular, like, the ones that he gets, they do look like Old Spice packaging.
They do, yeah. The red and, like, the logo, yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's intentional.
So he steals the Old Spice. Well, that's step one. Then step two is he takes all of his own armpit hair, makes a ball of it, takes a two-prop biplane to drop this giant wad of armpit hair into the city's water reservoir, water intake system.
Yep.
So it's all clogged, so you're not getting any clean, fresh water. Step three is chemically turn every single stick of deodorant into a pressure bomb, a pressure grenade of his own smell.
Like a concentrated smell grenade.
Yeah. And then buy out, that's step three. Step four is create and run commercials advertising your new deodorant brand.
This is the Smelly Joker aspect. This is just brand X. This is all from the Tim Burton Batman movie.
Yeah, and then make sure everyone in the city gets, and then don't even sell the deodorant. Give it away for free by quote-unquote accident. And then that's it. Step six is success. Everyone in the city is now stinky, just like you.
And then he can finally come.
Unfortunately, our heroes, Ty and Abby, absolutely fuck up his plans.
This is like why I'm like... Like, I'm so fixated on, like, labeling him a massive pervert, because, like, otherwise, what's the benefit to this whole terrorist plot?
Yeah, because, like, he wasn't even selling the stolen deodorant, so it's like, okay, there's no monetary value to this.
You're not making any money, you're just making the city smell awful, and then, what?
No, that's
like,
it.
They're gonna clean out that reservoir eventually, they can take a shower.
Yeah, but then he can come.
Yes, that's my theory.
I'm agreeing with you. Yeah, so... Oh yeah, Labrat just, like, dumps water on everybody.
Right, he chemically changes the makeup of the bacteria so that they eat the foul-smelling bacteria instead.
Yeah.
And produce good-scented bacteria. I don't know. It's a really quick wrap up for this episode.
Yeah, this episode has a ton of build up. There's so much like mystery involved in like, oh, we don't know who it is, and like Labrat's running tests to figure out like the DNA of this bacteria, but he needs like two samples, I guess.
It's a weird choice to like clouded in all of this mystery about who is committing this scent-based terrorism.
Yeah,
episodes into season two.
Yeah, like we know who Sloppy Joe is at this point.
And because all these characters are like really well designed in terms of their outline,
yeah,
we can see it even when you're like just showing him in silhouette. That's clearly Sloppy Joe.
Your character design is too good, guys. You can't do this.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, really, this episode is about Lab Rat finally, like breaking free of his recently developed germophobia.
Yeah. Like, at one point, he's got a massive pyramid of water bottles, and he's like, oh, it's fine, I've got enough to bathe myself. And Abby points out, like, with the water intake at the reservoir is like clogged, people don't have water to drink. And he's like, that sounds like a them problem.
He really does have a whole Howard Hughes moment in this episode.
Yeah.
Like, he goes fully off the deep end and just scrubbing himself in a tub until his skin bleeds. Like, he's going through a rough one in this episode.
Yeah. And like, because he's also got, a robot dog companion that he's designed now. We also get, like, the C-plot of Hermes getting jealous of the robot dog.
Doesn't really go anywhere. Just,
it does not. But Hermes is the one who gets him out of the funk. Pun intended,
literally.
I guess.
Yeah. Good on you.
Yeah. So Hermes is the one that convinces Lab Rat that, you know, he's got to go out and help his friends. So, yeah, so Lab Rat basically solves the entire problem. He creates the bacteria, dunks it on the entire city, catches Sloppy Joe in the water with the bacteria so that Sloppy Joe becomes clean. And then also his robot dog eats the armpit hair that's blocking the drain. Lab Rat solves every problem this episode.
No, Ty and Abby are fucking useless.
Yeah.
Like, they're just, like, this entire episode, they're just razzing each other for how bad they smell.
Yeah, that's just sibling shit. Just being like, go away, you're stinky. No, nuh-uh, you're stinkier.
And that these are your anti-terrorist agents.
Yep. That's it.
I feel like you could train an adult to do that, too, but okay.
I think you could.
But... sure, keep going to high school and hiding your identity from your parents.
Yeah, this episode does get a little bit of that because their dad works at the water filtration plant. So they have to go and, be present as Bureau of Grossology agents. But also, so they both, like, put on a silly voice to distract their dad. And it works because, like, their dad's kind of a mess, too.
Why is the Bureau of Grossology also, like, a secret organization?
Because it's funnier that way.
I guess so, but in this episode, they're quite literally, like, collaborating with the chief of police, who is dressed like a 1950s-style detective.
Yeah, and I love that for him.
With his big overcoat and his suspenders, love that, and his big mustache.
Yeah.
But if the local cops know about them and turn to them whenever a crime just gets too gross, I guess?
Well, it could be... okay, I'm thinking of, like...
Please, explain to
okay,
me how
okay,
this
okay,
works.
Okay, okay, okay. Do you know the structure, like, tabletop RPG Call of Cthulhu?
You've already lost me. No, I know that.
Okay, it has a spin-off game called Deltagreen.
Alright.
Where your characters are basically, like, agents for this Deltagreen system, and like your job is to basically just rock up, maybe see if there is anything otherworldly happening, solve it if you can, but also you're probably gonna die if you try to go up against everything. When you go to the location of the mystery, there's usually, like, one or two what are called Deltagreen friendlies at the location, and that can be, like, sometimes it's police officers, sometimes it's, like, a scientist at a local university who just is aware of Delta Green, but isn't involved because the less they know, the better. So I'm saying that the Bureau of Grossology is like Delta Green, where it's, like, a secret even within the government, and the chief of police here is a friendly.
Hmm. Okay. Okay. I guess I'll take that.
I mean, you gotta take something.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, how could I ever... How could I ever, like, get on board with this show made for kids?
Yeah.
Like, it didn't clearly and sufficiently lay out its structure of law enforcement and how it works in conjunction with grossology. So I've completely lost the plot.
I mean, also, I think we do get a little more background detail on, like, how specifically Abby and Ty ended up in the Bureau of Grossology.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm
like,
sure.
We are almost all the way through this series.
Yeah. Before we get into the cast, which there is plenty to talk about there, real quick, in Quebec, this show is known as Glurp Attack.
I'm sorry, that's a better name.
So is it still the Bureau of Grossology in the Quebec version?
See,
or is it the Bureau of Glurp?
My question is because a couple of times in this episode, they refer to it as, like, the gag lab.
The gag lab, yeah.
Yeah, which is like, okay, so wait, what's the second G?
Good question. Glurp? Is it Glurp?
Is it Glurp? That's what I want to know!
Like, we don't have to change it for the French dub.
Is gag lab, does it stand for Glurp Attack Grossology? Like, is it just both names put together?
You know what? Sure. Why not?
Okay.
Somebody who has seen the version of Grossology that aired in Quebec under the name Glurp Attack, hit us up and tell us.
Is because it called the Gag Lab still?
We can't move forward in our lives without this information. Like, what do they work for? Do they work for the Bureau of Grossology? Or is it the Bureau of Glurping?
Le Bureau du Glurp.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that. who is on this cast?
All right. So, as our dynamic teen duos, we've got, as Abby, is Crystal Meadows, who I don't believe we've come across yet.
No, her, like, her big time in Canadian animation dubbing, like, or voice acting, later 2000s, and we haven't really spent a lot of time in that.
Yeah, well, because, you know,
Late 2000s to the 2010s was her hot streak of major roles on a lot of kids' cartoons.
Yeah. She's also done a couple episodes of, like, Kim's Convenience, Nurses, like, she's done some live-action sitcom bits.
Plenty of CBC shows.
Oh, yeah, quick. Do you know which series she's been in?
Oh, her too. Okay. Murdoch?
Yeah!
Finally!
You got
yes.
one!
Fucking god damn it. First one of 2024.
Yeah. I really like her voice as Abby.
I like it too. I think it's a really well-tuned teenage girl protagonist. Like,
Yeah,
it worked really well.
She's got a really tough line to toe for this, where, like, she has to both be a, like, spunky action girl and also a fucking nerd.
Yep.
But only about gross shit. And she nails it. She strikes that balance really well. It's a really engaging performance.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have no issues with her performance. On the other side of the spectrum...
As Ty, we've got Michael D. Cohen.
No thank you to this performance.
The one thing I did kind of really enjoy is that he sometimes can make his voice break.
Yes.
So, like, he does kind of nail that, like, younger teenage brother mode of, like,
Yes, not disagreeing, but I feel like he's just in a perpetual, like, vocal fry for this entire episode, and mm-hmm. it's a lot. It's a lot when he's got, like, half of all the dialogue in this episode.
You say, doing vocal fry?
Yeah. I'm not a professional voice actor, though, so I think it's fine for, like, if they were obviously told him, like, the voice director told him, like, we need a semi-prepubescent boy who is going through the throes of having their voice changed. And he took that ball, ran with it, and I don't want to listen to it.
Alrighty.
His performance is, like, technically good. Like, he did exactly what they asked of mm-hmm. him, but it's, like, it's really obnoxious.
He's also mostly done, like, this is, it's not his first live, voice acting performance, but he has done more live action than voice acting.
Feels about right. Yeah. Because when I saw this person's picture on IMDb, I've absolutely seen him in stuff.
He's done a few, like, Nickelodeon shows, as well as Disney Channel shows.
He's got that face. He's got a
good face for tween sitcoms.
Kid to tween sitcom side character.
Yeah. Oh god, he's like a major character in Danger Force.
What is Danger Force?
That's the latest, or one of the latest Nickelodeon sitcoms.
Oh, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, he's one of the leads.
What the hell? It's like a superhero show?
He's the man in the van!
Of that show?
Yeah!
Huh.
Sorry, man, you've been demoted.
Yeah, well. Oh, that's interesting how your go-to is man in the van, where mine always, because of that Spider-Man movie, has been guy in the chair.
I got man in the van from Leverage.
From Leverage, wow.
Yeah.
Same character type. You know what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a localization thing.
Yeah, it's just dependent on where they sit their ass down is how you describe that character.
Yeah.
And so, either guy in chair or man in van. I'm assuming in the van that he's in a chair, so it all works out.
I don't know. He's got a lot going on in the van. Usually he's literally just popping a squat in the van.
Oh, there you go. Strong calves.
Yeah.
Who else appears in this episode?
So, interestingly, as Lab Rat, we have... He's credited here as M. Christian Haywood.
Right.
He goes by a lot of different names. Devin Christian Mack is what his IMDb is under.
All right. Stage name? Pseudonym,
yeah,
whatever.
he goes by a few. Sometimes it's Devin Mack.
Hell of a career, though.
Oh, like, yeah.
Been steadily voice acting multiple projects a year since 2009.
Yeah, and he's still very active. And again, I mean, he's the chef in Total Drama. Like, he's set for life.
Oh, wow, that's... Yeah, okay. That is a constant stream of checks,
because yeah.
That show's never going to end.
My man has a job forever.
Good for him, because I like his performance as Lab Rat. I like his character choice here.
Yeah, it's a fun character. I mean, Man in the Van, Guy in the Chair is just inherently a really fun character to get to play, where, like, you're just a guy.
Yeah.
And you can play up as much smugness as you want.
Yep. Yes. And he plays it up a lot. He's no, what was the man in the van, guy in the chair from Kim Possible? What was his name?
I never watched Kim Possible.
Wade.
Hardison.
That's what you mean, right?
Hardison is the man in the van from Leverage.
Hardison?
I couldn't remember his name.
Well, I'm glad we know.
Parker
but,
is literally the only character's name I remember consistently.
Are you due for a Leverage rewatch?
I might be. It's been a very long time.
All right. I like Christian Max here. His performance.
Yeah.
I think it's decently fixed to this character trope that they're going for, and with this episode specifically, they're giving him a lot to do. And
he goes on a full journey in this episode.
Yeah, like I think the only character that does.
Yeah.
This episode, at least, and it's good. Like I like his characterization of this highly neurotic agoraphobe.
Yeah. So then for this episode, as Sloppy Joe, we've got George Buza, who is he's an American who ended up moving to Canada in 98 and has just been absolutely crushing it in voice acting ever since. He's best known for voicing Beast in the X-Men, the original X-Men animated series, and he is returning for the new X-Men 97.
No shit.
Yeah, he is reprising that role.
Ah, good on him. Good on both Disney and for him for like coming back for that.
Yeah, keeping your cast. I did want to look up if this is like consistent. Did they bring back like the entire main cast?
Ah, that would have been really hard to coordinate, I bet, and I don't think Disney cares that much.
Yeah, no, even right off the top, the guy that got playing Scott Summers is way too young.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, his performance as Sloppy Joe is pretty good. I've got no complaints about it. You can just, like, throughout this entire episode, he's just kind of giggling and laughing to himself like a pervert would.
Like
and
a pervert.
Yeah, he nails it.
Yeah, he's just having a good time being a bad guy, and then absolutely getting his shit rocked with cleanliness.
Shit rocked with cleanliness. Is there anybody else that makes it? Oh, what about the director?
I did pull the director because it's returning to this show, Paul O'Sullivan.
Oh, is it?
It's George Shrinks' dad.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Did not pick up a bit of that.
No, not even a little bit. But yeah.
Oh yeah, I remember we went through this career when we were talking George Shrinks. Kind of eclectic, kind of all over the place.
Yeah, and it's such a minor performance in this episode, but the character of the director just cracks me up so much.
He found this entire organization just because he really, really, really fucking hates gross things.
Yeah, but so he's trying to give them their mission details, and he's just like about to throw up. I love him. I love it so much.
I don't think we mentioned it on the George Shrinks episode, but this was one of his last roles before he tragically passed away in 2012.
Yes.
To a young age of 48, so yeah. Thank you for all your service to Canadian animation, Mr. O'Sullivan.
Funny, funny guy. And he was in Murdoch Mysteries as Man with Cart.
Wow, what a role for him.
Yeah.
I think this director character, he saw the character description and really took it for a walk. He's having a lot of fun here.
It's a fun character. It's a fun role.
Yeah. What else can be said? Anything else to cover?
I mean, I guess I could do a fanfiction corner.
Please do. I know there's going to be a lot.
There's 85.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
By our standards, and for the usual Canadian cartoons that we cover, double digits is a rarity.
Yeah. This is almost triple digits.
Oh my god.
A lot of it is there's
self-insert.
Like, yes. There are a handful of people who've made their OCs to date Ty specifically.
Weird.
There's also Ty and Kid Rot.
Yeah.
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 You know what the world is really needing? Some Canadian yaoi. That's what the people are demanding. Some Canadian yaoi.
There's also just some There's, like, a few interesting, like, there's a character study on Lab Rat, which I think
Someone was armchair psychoanalyzing him?
No, just like, hey, we don't get a lot of backstory on this guy, so I'm gonna write him a backstory.
Ah, okay, okay.
And then Abby has, like, an in-character, or an in-universe, I don't know if they're, like, officially dating, or if she just has a crush on this guy named Chester that they go to school with. So there's a little bit of that.
I can't remember, but sure, why not? This show just feels like something that touched a chord with a very specific, like, vein of the fan base who have been holding on to it for now, what, 15 years?
Yeah. I mean, shit, some of it came out, I think the latest, yep, there's one from 2023. There's a lot from 2022.
Well, you know,
that was the year of Grossology, I guess.
I mean, we were all highly aware at that point of gross things in the air, so. Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit from the time it was airing, so, like, the earliest one is from 2008. There's a few from, like, 08, 09, some 2010. So, like, it's had a fairly consistent fandom, I guess.
Yeah, no one's really lost step with Grossology and the adventures of Ty and Abby. They've always held it close to their hearts. Because
yeah.
Who doesn't love some gross shit every now and then?
Who doesn't love gross shit?
Now I'm curious, like, if these, like, I'm not asking you to read one right now, but, like, these fanfictions, like, do they also just break away from their little love story between the characters and say, like, and by the way, did you know that the mucus breakup of a, like, standard bullet of snot that you blow out is actually composed of these elements?
Guarantee they don't. Also, Chester is Cowards. Kid Rot.
Ah!
Oh my god, that means there's so much drama. People can't decide to ship which sibling to ship Chester with.
Sorry, I didn't realize Chester was his name. I forgot his Christian name after he started going by Kid Rot.
Yeah, I also forgot that.
I will say, as, like, some closing thoughts on this, I kind of enjoyed coming back to this. I mean, most of this humor, it didn't work on me at the time, and absolutely did not work on me now. I made my own humor by just projecting all these fetishes onto the villain of this episode, but I think the show more or less holds up in terms of the look, design, and writing. I think it's perfectly fine.
Yeah, pretty much the same. It wasn't, like, doing it for me comedy-wise, but, like, just everything else about this show is weirdly comforting.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to put it, like, and I think it just all circles back to that very clean look that it's going mm-hmm. for. Just so easy to kind of be wrapped up into it.
Yeah. There's a lot of, like, really nice little character animations too, like expressions, mm-hmm. and it's a charming show.
Yeah, once you over, like, this is one of those shows that's being very, very upfront with just how much it's leaning on gross out humor.
Oh yeah.
Unlike something like Spliced, which is like, it kind of carries that under its arm and then just kind of blindsides you with how gross it's being.
Yeah.
Because it's a show about, like, cute little mixed up genetic freaks and their time on an island. And then, oh, by the way, they are, like, absolutely just blowing snot at each other at all times.
No, Grossology, like, wears it. It's right on the tin. It's like, yep. we're not going to surprise you with disgustingness. We're telling you up front. Shit's nasty.
Yeah, so you can't really fault it for that. Like, yeah. It's not my style of humor, and I outgrew it even before I was the right age for it. But at the very least, it's owning it and trying its best to inject as much education as it can. I will say those educational lessons, they fly by real quick.
Oh, yeah. I didn't learn shit.
Nope.
I remain in ignorance.
Congratulations. Anywho, thank you so much for listening to yet another episode of Cartoon Night in Canada. If you like what you heard, and how could you not, please consider giving us a like, share, review, and subscribe on your podcatcher of choice, preferably Apple Podcasts, because that helps us reach the widest possible audience. You can find the show on Twitter at Cartoon Night Pod, where we post new episodes every Saturday.
Except when we don't.
Yeah. You can find myself on Twitter at Cinema Creep, where I will be continuing my journey of diagnosing all of the grossology rogues gallery with their highly specific fetishes.
Please
join me. Please join me on that as I break open my copy of the DMSN-5 and really let them have it.
Oh, God. And you can find me at Sylvie Skeletons, where I won't be doing that, but I will be ranking the top 5 nastiest things I've come across on the job.
That's a coveted list. I'm sure I've heard of at least one of them.
I'm 90% sure I've mentioned 2 of them to you.
Okay, so you've spared me the other 3 up until now. I thought you had like a slam dunk going there, where I'll be tweeting my watch along of Leverage.
Oh shit! That's much better. Okay, wait, no. Can you just clip it in? I'll do that again.
Who knows? I might put it all in.
No. I'll be doing a watch along of Leverage.
There you go. Goodbye.